Hello, I'm Suzanne Paris. This is number 0141, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0141. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet American Idol winner Taylor Hicks. He's very grateful for the opportunities he's had.
Never in a million years would I have thought that I was at where I was going to be right now. I'm just so blessed to have caught the break. And when I mean break, I personally believe the biggest break in the entertainment industry. And winning, you know, the season that I was on and it being the most viewed season so far and ultimately one of the most watched in the last decade. Having that, you know, card to play really allows you to sustain a career in this business.
Nick Santora is the author of the novel 15 Digits, which deals with insider trading.
Before I was a writer, I was an attorney. And when you become an attorney, you have to take an ethics portion of the bar exam. And they make you take all of these seminars and all of this counseling on what is insider trading and confidentiality and all of these things. And then they take these documents that are for huge mergers and acquisitions and deals and SEC filings, and they send them down into the basement of a law firm where you have kids who barely graduated high school copying, collating, formatting them, and then sending them back up to the lawyers. And these kids down there don't even realize that they have next week's Wall Street Journal in their hands, information that's worth billions.
Bradley Quick, author of Quick Fix, A Simple Process for Positive Change. He's had a very difficult life, but he's managed to turn it around.
Using my best coping mechanisms, I ended up a Skid Row junkie. And so my best thinking was my worst enemy. But it was due to a profound spiritual experience that I wasn't seeking, I wasn't waiting for, that allowed me to get through the tough part there. And then by adopting another method of living, one other than my own, I got to change my demeanor and change everything.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0141, was Suzanne Paris, a graphic artist and writer right here in Montreal. And you can go to the website at thestufffile.com and you'll find links to Suzanne's webpage. Thank you very much, Suzanne, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. The Stuff File program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the Stuff File news, shall we? Well, they say that hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, especially if she's a dentist, it seems. In London, 45-year-old Marek Olszewski made the big mistake of stopping to see his ex, 34-year-old Dr. Anna Makowiec, for a toothache. Marek had dumped her and ended their romantic relationship for another woman recently, so we're not quite sure what he was thinking. Anyway, Dr. Anna, as I mentioned, a dentist, later told reporters, "I tried to be professional and detach myself from my emotions, but when I saw him lying there, I just thought, what an expletive." Figure out what she said. Anyway, so professionalism went out the window. She put her ex-boyfriend under anesthesia and proceeded to surgically pull out every single one of his 32 teeth. Marek said he could tell something was wrong when he awoke and couldn't feel any teeth in his mouth. And in an ironic twist, his new girlfriend promptly dumped him because, well, she said she couldn't date a man without any teeth. Dr. Anna is now under investigation for medical malpractice and abusing the trust of a patient and could spend 3 years in prison. But at least she could still smile. You know, I almost gave this guy consideration for Idiot of the Day for picking the woman he dumped to enter his mouth with sharp objects, but I didn't. It's still early in the show, and that comes later. But seriously, what the heck was he thinking? Really? Anyway, here's a pro tip. Next time you decide to steal an airplane, make sure you remember to untie it from the tarmac. In Compton, California, police arrested 25-year-old Troy Daniel Long, a former flight student of a municipal airport on South Los Angeles, after he allegedly tried to steal a plane at gunpoint. He went to the tarmac and got onto a two-seat single-engine Cessna 152 prop plane and started the engine. As deputies arrived, Long was revving the engine, attempting to fly away, but since the back part of the plane was still secure to the tarmac, he could not take off. The plane was lurching and bucking against the chain as deputies, with guns drawn, began yelling for Long to turn off the plane's engine. He finally pulled off his headset, turned off the engine, put his hands in the air, got out, and was taken into custody. Nice going, not so fly boy. When Derek A. Thoen, age 28, went into City Hall in Iowa City, Iowa, he was apparently angry about getting a parking ticket. He stepped up to the receptionist and allegedly said, "I have your parking attendant in the trunk of my car. Do you want him dead or alive?" She called for a police officer to speak to Thoen, who found him, quote, elevated in emotion, unquote, over the citation. So much so that he was arrested and charged with disorderly conduct for his threats. And I guess now he's going to be really upset. By the way, no word as to whether there was actually someone in the trunk, but I'm assuming there was not. After two armed robberies of a CVS store in Potomac, Maryland, within a week, police wondered if it might just be an inside job. Store supervisor Fenton Graham, age 35, was the victim both times. They pulled tapes from the store's surveillance cameras and saw that in the second robbery, the gunman forgot the bag of cash as he fled, and Graham ran out to take it to him. Police have identified the robber as Michael Cook, age 53, Graham's girlfriend's father. The girlfriend, Michelle Allison, age 29, has also been arrested. Three masterminds, and none of them thought of the security cameras. What a bright bunch. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, it's horrible to die for a senseless reason. It's worse to die for a senseless reason by the most painful way possible. In Haiku City, China, a 41-year-old female rode her scooter to an elementary school to pick up her child. When she went to park her scooter in front of the nearby shop, the shopkeeper, a 42-year-old male, came out and told her she couldn't park there. She got angry, and an argument broke out, which then escalated into a physical confrontation between the man and the woman. She then killed the man by squeezing his testicles so hard he died. No kidding. The man was immediately rushed to hospital after passing out, but just didn't make it. Okay, this is not a woman you want to piss off. This is the kind of woman you would find in a modern Grimm's fairy tale. Yee, she's scary. Anyway, on to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Taylor Hicks was the winner of the fifth season of American Idol. Since then, he's been quite busy. A hit album, a run in a Broadway show, performances with many celebrities, and he penned his autobiography. He's about to embark on an 8-week engagement headlining at Bally's Las Vegas in June. But he's taking a few moments to chat with us here on the line from Nashville. Hi, Taylor.
How are you?
I'm just fine. Thanks for being on the program with us, especially considering with your very, very busy schedule. Is your career going the way you always anticipated and dreamed that it would?
Well, never in a million years would I have thought that I was at where I was going to be right now. I'm just so blessed to have caught the break. And when I mean break, I personally believe the biggest break in the entertainment industry and winning, you know, the season that I was on and it being the most viewed season so far and ultimately one of the most watched in the last decade. You know, one of those, having that, card to play really allows you to sustain a career in this business.
We see people go through so much on American Idol and there is an immense amount of pressure. Obviously, you're very, very talented, but that pressure can play on someone's mind. Does that pressure or has that pressure been equaled at any time during your career? I mean, that's a pressure cooker.
You know, it really is. And one thing that you have to really, do to prepare yourself for that kind of pressure is to play as many shows and to learn a craft like I have. I mean, obviously, working for so long in different clubs and different venues all across America, you know, for when that really prepped me for that, you know, that time period when I was on the show and song selection show, I do think it makes a big difference.
People who have won American Idol and also people who have been runners-up in American Idol have had successful career starts. At what point through the process, either during Idol, when you made it to the final few, or after winning it, did you feel your career is going to take off?
Well, I had a vision as a kid that I was going to be an entertainer because I, you know, obviously spent a lot of time working on playing instruments and singing, and all of it was self-taught. And I had this vision that, you know, if I just stayed on track and made sure that, that my karma wheel was intact, so to speak, that I would ultimately get that one opportunity. I would say that, you know, when I was on the show, I think once I got down to the top three, I started really figuring out that this was my career path, and you know, I'm just very blessed to have all those fans, not only in America but you know worldwide. That show, and the show still does to this day, reach a worldwide audience, and I'm very blessed for that.
I mentioned in the introduction that you've had a chance to work with many celebrities, people like Willie Nelson, Snoop Dogg, Gladys Knight, Earth, Wind & Fire, the Allman Brothers. Do you get starstruck?
Yeah, at first I did. At first I definitely did, and I still do a little bit to this day. But I think, having been in the business now for about 6 years, I am pretty comfortable in my own skin, and I think I understand some of the pressures and some of the ideas of fame and what that entails and stuff. And, you know, it's interesting, when you're around people that understand you and there are not too many folks that are famous, there's almost like the ice is already broken and you can really be yourself around other people because you understand ultimately what they go through. So, I still get starstruck a bit, but I definitely understand where they come from.
I mentioned the Broadway show. You starred as Teen Angel in Grease and then also went on a national tour. What was that like for you?
Well, you know, being from Alabama, I never thought in a million years I would star in New York City on Broadway. But ultimately, it really made sense. I mean, I am a visual performer. And musical. So when you combine visuality and also musicality, you've got Broadway theater. And for a stepping stone into TV and film, the Broadway theater is the perfect place to start from. And not only that, but a cameo role is a perfect place to really observe musical theater from kind of an outside perspective looking in. And once that happens, you can really start understanding your role, starting understanding the musical theater and ultimately, getting into the audition process for film and TV.
Now, coming up, as I mentioned, you're going to be at Bally's Las Vegas starting in June. I believe it's June 26th for an 8-week run. Tell us what one can expect if they're lucky enough to have a chance to see you in Vegas.
Well, I couldn't be more excited about doing a Vegas residency. I actually auditioned for American Idol in Vegas, and in 6 years I'm headlining in Vegas. So it's definitely come full circle for me. And obviously the show is going to have some songs off of the American Idol run and some great American classics, and ultimately some songs off of my last records. So having that opportunity to headline in Vegas is just something really special.
With such a busy schedule that you have, do you get a chance to watch American Idol? And do you watch it, if you do get to watch it, do you watch it differently than from before you were on?
Well, I definitely think you understand some of the bells and whistles and the tricks that, from a production standpoint that they use I do watch the show. A lot of people ask me about it. They ask me who their favorites, who my favorites are, and I just enjoy it, and I think it is a staple. I think there's a lot of knockoffs nowadays, and you really can't beat the first one, and I think American Idol has done that. I think it will stay around for, quite some time, and I was just really, happy to be a part of it.
With so many things that you've done in your career, from Broadway, the album, you're heading to Vegas. I know you just a few minutes ago touched on the idea of auditioning and films and movies. Where would you like to see your career go? What have you not done yet that you'd like to do?
I think a role on television and film. I think a great role, a great typecasted role, would be something that would be. I would be kind of the natural progression of me being an entertainer. I think that's definitely on the horizon. It just takes that really special role to really, make an impact. So I think that's definitely on the horizon, but I'm also learning, and making sure that the right steps are taken to land that role.
The thing that most people go through when they want to be a performer of some kind, they imagine what it's like to be a performer and to do the kind of work that they love to do, and it's been a lifelong passion. But nothing really prepares you for fame and fan reaction. How's that been for you, and what's that like?
Well, I enjoy the fan interaction. I mean, obviously, if it wasn't for all the fans and all the people that voted for me on the show, then you wouldn't have a career. So I'm very mindful and respectful of all of those people, whether it's, it's signing merchandise after shows or saying hello at dinners. And, it's just, it's something that you really got to take to heart. And there is, you got to make sure that they feel like that their vote and their fanship really counts. And I try to do that.
But nobody ever anticipates when they go into a career that they're going to be People Magazine's Hottest Bachelor of the Year.
No, that never crossed my mind. Trust me.
Well, continued success with all that you do, and good luck with the run in Bally's. Is it possible that the 8-week can actually be extended?
Oh, there's always it's open ended. If it's really doing well and the show's doing great, then yeah, there's no question that there could be an extension. And I love Vegas, and Vegas is legendary, and I'm just really looking forward to starting the run.
Well, people can find out more information by going to ballyslasvegas.com or checking out your website at taylorhicks.com. And I thank you very, very much, Taylor, for being on the program with us.
Hey, I really appreciate that. Talk to you real soon. Thank you so much.
Taylor Hicks, who will be headlining starting in June at Bally's Las Vegas. You can find out more information by going to either the Bally's website or Taylor's website. And, of course, you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0141, and you'll find links to both Bally's and Taylor's sites.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to Nick Santoro, who's a writer, producer, and also novelist. His new book is out called 15 Digits. And we'll also touch base with Bradley Quick, who's the author of Quick Fix, a simple process for positive change. He's a man who's been through a lot, literally hell and back. But we have more Stuff File news before we get to all of that excitement on this, the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio. And I just want to remind you that Stitcher, if you don't know this already, is a free news and talk mobile app that's available for your smartphone or just about every portable or mobile device. And when you download Stitcher, when you download Stitcher to hear the Stuff File program, you have a chance to win some money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in any app store. Download it. It's free and takes just a few seconds. And during registration, hit the promo code and enter Stuff File. And Stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's S-T-U-P-H-F-I-L-E. And get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episode of the show will be waiting for you in your favorites. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows too. Over 5,000 shows and counting on Stitcher. Always available to you on demand. There's no syncing. It's Stitcher Smart Radio, the smart way to listen to radio. So don't forget, enter the promo code STUFFFILE when you register for your chance to win. On to the Stuff File news. Now here's some fast food culture shock for you. As of this past December, a lone White Castle restaurant in Lafayette, Indiana, has tried to go upscale by providing diners with a high-style experience that includes table service and an actual wine list to go with its iconic slider hamburgers and fries. A state wine industry expert told the Wall Street Journal that she would recommend a Merlot, although a Moscato was fun and the Chardonnay was passable. All wines do come in $4.50 screw-off top bottles and are served in clear plastic glasses. Stay classy, Indiana. Stay classy. And boy, those Romanians have some weird laws. In Constanta, a police officer pulled over a woman who was riding on the back of a motorcycle and proceeded to ticket her for not wearing a helmet. We might mention that she was also completely naked at the time, but the officer didn't seem to be having a problem with that, only that she had no headgear. Anyway, motorists got out of their cars to take photographs with their cell phones of the smoking hot biker, and those photos can be found all over the net. And after accepting her punishment, she then donned a helmet before continuing her journey, still, I may add, completely naked. Bet you're thinking differently about Romania now, huh? In Marietta, Georgia, Robbie Parker's family are enjoying their 15 minutes of international fame after a video of Robbie and his 3 children singing Bohemian Rhapsody on their commute into school has gone viral on YouTube. 41-year-old Robbie says it all started when he decided to play some Queen one morning, noting, "The first time I sang it for them, they looked at me kind of funny. But the next day, they asked for it again. By the end of the week, they all knew the words and now seem to enjoy it quite a bit." The video doesn't look unlike that famous scene from Wayne's World, but it's funnier with little kids. Robbie says the song is the perfect length because it starts as they leave home and ends as they pull up at school. He decided to film their performance one morning and posted the clip on YouTube, where it has attracted 2.5 million hits to date. of his adorable youngsters, he says, "They are just the most fantastic kids in the world. It's just a joy to hang out with them in the mornings." You got to check out the video. And yes, I have put a link in to the video from the Stuff File page. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0141, and you'll find that link. And when you watch it, it will definitely make you go, "Aw." And you know, the thing I like about it too is these kids, years from now, will look back on those trips to school and they will still smile from all the great memories. It's kind of neat. Okay, this cannot be good press. The Heart Attack Grill in Las Vegas is definitely living up to its name. Another customer, this time a woman, collapsed into unconsciousness while eating a double bypass burger, drinking a margarita, and smoking a cigarette. That's the second time in 2 months a customer has collapsed while eating one of the famed burgers named after various forms of cardiac arrest. You may remember just a couple of weeks ago we mentioned that other one on this program, and here we are not too far from that situation with another one. The Heart Attack Grill's owner, John Basso, says the woman is currently recovering in the hospital. Basso also claims he himself has eaten at least one single bypass burger each day since his restaurant first opened 7 years ago. The Heart Attack Grill offers free meals to any customer who weighs over 350 pounds. Okay, that's just wrong. And also features a butterfat milkshake, non-filtered cigarettes, flatliner fries, and four burgers, each rated on an ascending scale of a single bypass to a quadruple bypass. Now, last year, the company's 600-pound spokesperson, yes, they had a 600-pound spokesperson. The optimum word here is had a 600-pound spokesperson. That person died at the age of only 29. I'm sure they thought this was all really cute until that guy keeled over. You know, this is a marketing plan whose best days might just be behind it. Well, we've found the world's biggest crybaby, or maybe the world's biggest jerk, take your pick. That would be 37-year-old Kevin Johnson of Arizona, who actually filed a police complaint because a flight attendant lightly tapped him on the knee with a magazine to wake him up. Johnson was sleeping in the back row of a chartered millionaire flight when the incident happened, saying that as he slept and the plane taxied to the gate, he was, quote, rudely interrupted, unquote, by a flight attendant. Of course, he couldn't identify exactly which flight attendant it was, and police officer Ricky Seconds wrote that Johnson had no physical signs of injury, no complaint of pain or paralysis from the magazine. Must have been some hell of a dream, that's all I have to say. Seriously, some people just should simply not leave the house. This guy is one of them. And while we're on the topic of airlines, we have one more story in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me. South Africa's Kaluwa Airlines is known for its quirky promotions, and the latest doesn't disappoint. All through the month of April, they had the Your Fourth Wife Flies Free promotion. Yes, the airline's Facebook page had an ad that reads, "Not only will you get a great deal on Kaluwa.com flights for your first three wives, but your fourth wife will fly for free." This is in no subtle way a nod to South Africa's president, Jacob Zuma, who recently married his fourth wife. Anyway, the promotion seems to be serving its purpose and getting lots of attention. So many things are going through my mind, but they're all extremely sexist, so let's just move on in the program to our guest, shall we? We had Nick Santora on the program a little while back. At the time, we talked about the television show that he was one of the creators and executive producers of, called Breakout Kings. That show's on A&E. In addition to a stellar television resume, Nick is also an accomplished novel writer. His latest book is called 15 Digits, and that is what he's on the program to talk about this time around. He joins us from California. Hi, Nick.
How you doing?
Fine. Nice to have you back on the show with us.
I love being on the show. I think it's my third or fourth time, and I absolutely love it, so
well,
thank you.
Third time on this show, but if you go back to my previous incarnation on the old radio show, I think you're up to about five now.
Look at that. What did I get, a gold watch or something?
I didn't get a gold watch for leaving that last place, but that's a whole other story. So tell us about this this book, 15 Digits. It's a very interesting insider trading kind of story, right?
Yeah, it's really funny because in my previous life, before I was a writer, I was an attorney. And when you become an attorney, you have to take an ethics portion of the bar exam. And then I went and worked at a really big firm, and they make you take all of these seminars and all of this counseling on what is insider trading and confidentiality and all of these things, all of these precautions to make sure you never do anything that can even have a scent of impropriety, that you can't do anything that can even be construed as insider trading. And then they take these documents that are for huge mergers and acquisitions and deals and SEC filings, and they send them down into the basement of the law firm, 30, 40 floors down, where you have kids who barely graduated high school copying, collating, formatting them, and then sending them back up to the lawyers. And these kids down there don't even realize it, but they have next week's Wall Street Journal in their hands, information that's worth billions. And no protections are taken at these law firms with respect to the guys in the basement, because no one thinks they're smart enough to know what to even do with that information.
Now, do you ever think when you write a story like this, because every once in a while a film comes out or a book like this comes out that kind of pulls the curtain back on something going on, and I'm sure there are people within that particular business who go, oh my, we haven't thought of that.
Yeah, my answer to that is not my problem. It's your problem. You've got all these secrets. You better really make sure that this stuff is being watched carefully, because it affects the integrity of our entire economic system. Who was the author years ago, and it's not a joke, it's very serious, but he wrote a novel that ended with terrorists trying to fly planes into the White House, and then a few years later 9/11 happened. I'm not saying they got the idea from that, but I think things that are written are often reflective of things that are just kind of out there, ideas, zeitgeists. And this thing is out there. This information is being thrown around all over the place, and it can be used in this way.
Now, I know you do a lot of research in the stuff that you write. You took these ethics quizzes when you were a lawyer, which was a little while ago. Time moves very quickly. With the world that we live in today, with social media and the internet, is insider trading different today than it was when you were a lawyer?
Yeah, it's really tricky. It's one of those things where it's kind of amorphous, I believe. And listen, I haven't practiced law full-time in a long time. But it's amorphous to some extent, because what is insider trading? What is something that someone tells you that is material information that you're misappropriating? What if you have a friend who's always bragging about how his dad's a genius and his dad runs a company, and you see that your friend is buying a new car every weekend and he's going skiing all over the world and his dad's really rich, and you just say, you know what? This guy's dad must be a smart businessman. I'm going to buy some of that company's stock. And the stock goes through the roof and you make money. Well, did you just do insider trading? You kind of had information other people didn't have access to, but it wasn't anything specific. It's really weird. And with social networking and the way information shared so easily, who knows what's violative of the law or not? That's why I barely have any stocks. I'm not taking any risks.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction that in addition to being a writer, you're also a television producer, a writer of television shows as well. You've worked on shows like The Sopranos, Law & Order, Prison Break. I mentioned Breakout Kings. Where do you find the time, or how do you divide your time between writing novels? You had a previous novel called Slip and Fall, and working in television.
This book was written in between seasons 1 and 2 of Breakout Kings. You have a couple of months off, and I'm the kind of guy who can't just relax. I'm kind of a hyper guy. My wife will tell you that. And I had a couple of months off, and I just hold myself up in this tiny little office that I have that intentionally has no windows, no phone, and no internet. I have a card table and a chair. And I sit there and I just write, and I'll write for 12 hours if I have to. And 2 months later, 15 Digits was done. And then it just kind of fell out of me. It was a real easy story to write. It was a fun story to write.
Now, how do you decide, because you still do a lot of writing for television, how do you decide in your mind, oh, this story is going to be for television. This story is going to be a book.
Yeah, if it's a big enough story, if it's a story where I feel the characters really can live and breathe longer than just an hour of TV, which is really only about 43 minutes and 25 seconds of actual storytelling when you take out the commercials, if it's bigger than that, I'll try to see if maybe it's a movie, maybe it's a book. It's kind of instinctual, and sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. I've written things that my agents will say, this is great, but this is a movie. You should really expand this. And sometimes I'll write stuff and they'll say, this isn't good for anything, throw it out.
So, when you're writing episodic television, there's a certain grind to that too. You've got to really churn that stuff out, and there's the pressure cooker of being a TV writer. Then you get some time off and you say, you know what, I'm going to write a book. Is it sort of like a busman's holiday for you, or is it completely like using a different muscle, writing a novel as opposed to writing a script?
That's exactly right. And it's also, in some ways, it's brutal because it takes so much longer. At this stage, if I have a good outline, I can write a television script in a day and a half. And then I'll turn around and write a book. And that is just, I know it sounds silly to say something that takes a physical toll on you when you're not doing real physical work. My dad was a carpenter. He did real physical work. Sitting and typing is not physical. But at the end of the day, if you're there for 12 hours, it's a grind because your back's killing you, your neck's killing you, you start getting carpal tunnel. That's the stinky part. The great part, though, is when you're writing a book, I don't have to worry about what's in the budget. Do we have time to shoot this? Where are we going to get the locations to shoot this? Is the actor available? Am I going to get notes from a bunch of executives that are going to tell me how they think the story should be? It's just all mine, and it's just paper and what you can fill it with from your imagination. So it's really, even though it's sometimes a grind for the amount of hours, it's quite freeing creatively.
So in other words, it's the difference between, if I'm going to use the busman's holiday kind of analogy, it's the difference between driving a commuter bus every day and then on your time off taking the Winnebago out on an open road.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. You're still driving, and you might even be doing longer hours in the Winnebago, but you're getting to go wherever your fancy takes you, and with very few restrictions. You don't have to follow the bus route. That's a great analogy. I'm going to steal that.
Feel free to go run with that one. So what's up next for you? You got the book out now. What's up next for you television-wise?
Well, we're waiting to see if season 3 of Breakout Kings is going to happen. The numbers have been, when I say numbers, I mean the ratings have been very strong season 2, and the fans of the show are enjoying it. I've had some offers coming in on some other shows, and I'm weighing those options, and I might just want to create a new show. Things are kind of up in the air for me right now, to be honest, more than they ever have been in my career. I'm not sure what I'm going to do next, but it's kind of freeing to know that I have some options, and I might take a year off from TV and just write some movies. I started writing a movie recently. I really don't know is the answer, but that's okay because I've kind of been really structured and regimented for the past 11 years. So I'm willing to roll the dice and just see what happens and where fate takes me.
And we should mention Breakout Kings is on A&E, correct?
Yes, sir. Sunday nights.
Excellent. And the new book is called 15 Digits. And Nick, it's always a joy to have you on the program and talk about all the things you do. I don't know where you find the time to talk to us.
I'll talk to you anytime you'll have me.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Nick Santora, author of 15 Digits. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0141, and you'll find links to Nick's website, plus links to Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. A lot of prescription drugs carry warnings that say may cause drowsiness or do not operate heavy machinery when taking this medicine. Obviously, that's important information, but especially to job providers responsible for public safety. Imagine the trouble that could be caused by a bus driver who's taken medicine and then falls asleep at the wheel. To prevent injuries, many job providers have required employees to notify them when they use medicine that causes drowsiness. But that's all going to change now because of a lawsuit recently won by the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission, and the consequences could be devastating. The EEOC, as it's also known, can now prohibit job providers from asking employees if they're using prescription painkillers that cause drowsiness, unless they have evidence that the employee is already impaired. Let's be fair, an employer might not have that evidence until after someone, like a forklift operator, causes a serious accident. And guess who will get sued then? Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
If you're listening to this while walking with your iPod, make sure you look both ways before you cross the street. It's safety first on The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we will talk to Bradley Quick, author of Quick Fix, a simple process for positive change. And of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. Wait for it, that's coming up a little later on. But right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. It's been proven in Kyrgyzstan that an eternal flame is only eternal as long as you pay the gas bill. If you don't, it's bye-bye flame. And so the gas company in the economically struggling former Soviet nation has turned off the gas supply to a major war memorial in the capital of Bishkek after city authorities failed to pay the $9,400 overdue debt. A gas company spokesperson said the bill had been outstanding for 3 years, and despite confusion over who exactly is supposed to pay the bill, a government spokesperson says it hopes the flame can be reignited by May the 9th, when most ex-Soviet republics celebrate victory in World War II. Gas company without a heart or a sense of history. Nice. And this is just weird. In Sandpoint, Idaho, 30-year-old John Ernest Cross was arrested and charged with assault after police say he ordered another man to perform the moonwalk at gunpoint. Yes, Michael Jackson's famous moonwalk. Investigators accused Cross of using a semi-automatic rifle during the episode, but Cross claimed it was only a pellet gun. Only. Yeah. As to motive, nobody has a clue. Oh, come on. Somebody must have a clue. What's the victim saying? The victim's not talking? Was this just a moonwalk random request? I mean, what's the deal here? And have you got a goatee? Then you owe a Russian man by the name of Ivy Pugash some money. At least he thinks so. Mr. Pugash says he owns the trademark to the famous facial hairstyle. Further, he claims the beard is meant for the exclusive use of the Russian people, and any non-Russian sporting a goatee is committing a form of genocide. Wow. He's demanding that all non-Russians pay him $600 for the rights to his goatee, $30,000 if they are famous. He also feels TV stations should give him $4 million to license the goatee. Back in America, Phil Olson, who heads Beard Team USA, an organization of American men who promote the growing art of bearding, well, he says, it's hard to trademark something millions of people have. So far, no actual lawsuits have been filed by Mr. Pugash, and nobody is really paying any attention to his rather ridiculous claims. Another classic case of someone who needs a checkup from the neck up. Anyway, I'm sure this extortion plan will be hair today, gone tomorrow. And we have an idiot of the day coming up in just a matter of moments here on the Stuff File program. But first, we still have one more guest to get to, our third guest on this edition of the show. Bradley Quick is a man who has certainly been through a lot in life, probably more than most people. Yet he's still here, seemingly happy and healthy, and he's also the author of Quick Fix, a simple process for positive change. Bradley is on the line with us right now from California. Hi, Bradley.
Hello, sir. How are you doing this evening?
I'm hanging in there. Thanks for being on the program with us. One of the things I wanted to talk about, I mean, you've written this book. You've been through so much, and we want to share a little bit of your story. But what makes you special in that you managed to survive everything you've been through?
Well, I know I had a profound spiritual experience which kept me alive. Using my best coping mechanisms, I ended up a Skid Row junkie here in Los Angeles, California. And so my best thinking was my worst enemy. But it was due to a profound spiritual experience that I wasn't seeking, I wasn't waiting for, that allowed me to get through the tough part there. And then by adopting another method of living, one other than my own, I got to change my demeanor and change everything.
Now, I alluded to some of the things that you've been through in life. Go through a little bit of it. By the time you were 8 years old, four of your brothers and your only sister had already passed away?
Yes, they had died of cystic fibrosis. Go ahead.
And you yourself suffered a severe brain trauma only a year later when you were nine?
Yeah, when I was 9 years old, I had was in a bicycle accident and ended up being knocked out for 3 weeks in a coma for a month, paralyzed, and I couldn't walk or talk when I got out of it. See, when they first pulled me into the hospital, they told my parents I'd die by morning or be a total bedridden vegetable for the rest of my life.
So again, you've been through so much. Your parents had been through so much. I don't want to go out on a limb and say it's not necessarily surprising how, as you alluded to earlier, you fell on some hard times later on as an adult. They always say you have to hit rock bottom. I mean, you've been through so much. How did you know when you hit rock bottom?
Well, I didn't know that I'd hit rock bottom. I only had 7 drunk drivings. I was only convicted of 4 counts attempted murder once. I'd only blown every opportunity in relationship and opportunity and passion in life I ever had. I lived to do drugs and did drugs to live. That was my MO. And I was just asking something I didn't comprehend, understand, or necessarily even believe in. At the time in my life when I was suggested I do so, and it zapped me and picked me up and took me places where I couldn't go myself.
The situations that happened to you early in your childhood, could you pinpoint those happenings as leading to perhaps maybe, for lack of a better term, a very angry childhood?
I don't know about angry childhood. When my parents would leave the house with a child, a sick child, go to the hospital and come back without the child, the child had obviously passed, I would go to the corner of the room and stand in the corner and look at the wall. And they would try to explain it to me, and I would not even acknowledge them. But understand, on the flip side of that coin, I started first grade when I was 3 years old. By the time I was 4, I spoke 3 languages. At 5, I was swimming in Olympic pools. I was a little prodigy, a little athlete. I was amazing. Well, absolutely amazing. It wasn't that I didn't have the ability to comprehend that. I was just stuffing it emotionally.
Okay, because the reason why I brought up anger is I figured either perhaps you were angry at what had happened in your childhood or what happened to members of your family, or you felt a sense of mortality in that thinking, you know, everyone around you seems to die at a young age. Maybe you won't be around that long, so live hard, as you did earlier in life.
Well, when I had that accident, I was it knocked me back down to zero. It was infantile status. I had to learn to walk and talk all over again. When I got out of it, my whole right side was paralyzed. I had no coordination. I had to go through physical therapy and speech therapy and vision therapy and all these therapies to try to integrate back into society. I was starting out from, instead of coming from a place of superiority or strength, I was coming from a place of need and weakness. It was really, really pathetic.
Okay, so let's flash forward to your future. You've written this book, which I alluded to earlier, A Quick Fix, A Simple Process for Positive Change. What made you write this book, and who exactly did you write it for?
Well, as someone suggested, when I was about 12 years into this thing, into this this mission of transformation, someone suggested I write a book about my life. And I reminded them I wasn't a writer. I was a hope-to-die derelict junkie from Skid Row. And so I went and found a ghostwriter to write this story for me, write my book for me. And she asked me to write 5 pages so she could derive my style and write it like I would write it. And so I said, okay, I'll do that. So I sat down in a dinosaur laptop computer to compose these 5 pages. It was really tough, but I just kept going, and all of a sudden I got zapped by the book. It came through me like a ton of bricks. It took me 90 days to write it. I never called that woman back.
it came through me like a ton of bricks. It was absolutely amazing.
Was writing this book almost a cathartic experience for you?
Well, I think so, but I'm not quite. See, I didn't know that at that point. I didn't know there was several ways to spell there. I didn't know anything. So my punctuation was off, my spelling was off, but the words just flowed right through me, and my ego got involved when I was done with it, and I thought I was somebody.
So what will people find out about in reading Quick Fix? What do you want them to know?
People will find out if they keep doing what they're doing, they'll keep getting what they're getting. If they want something different, they've got to do something different. No change, no gain. And that each one of us has a passion and a purpose in life. We're each as unique as our DNA or our fingerprint. We are one of a kind spiritual beings having a human experience. And all of that will come through if you engage in the process, if the reader engages in the process, which allows you to uncover, discover, and discard what you think you know, so you can open yourself up to what can be. And then you can be inspired intuitively with a thought or decision by the powers that be in the universe. And in turn, become as inspired as the bumblebee or the grasshopper.
Do you think our biggest roadblocks in life are ourselves?
Yes. Yes. You got to get out of your own way. But see, that's societal, isn't it? Societal, the matrix that society has built keeps us in a cage. That doesn't mean that we lose our freedom completely, but we think our freedom, being free and having the freedom that we're raised to have, are two different things. When you can get out of this matrix into the spiritual matrix, it's a whole other world out there. It's a whole other inspiration, rather than having to keep up with the Joneses.
Do you ever worry or concern yourself with the life that you had before ever rearing its head again, or are you completely convinced that that is truly all behind you?
Well, it's truly all behind me because I don't drink and use. I don't drink alcohol or do drugs, no matter what, no matter what my head says, no matter what the circumstances are, no matter what, just right now. Just snap the fingers, and just for that long, I don't do it. And I haven't done it in 25 years. Now, I can rest idle on that, or I can continue to engage in processes other than my own and learn from my mentors, learn from the people I interview on my radio show, and get involved in processes other than my own and learn from that and help other people do that. Bring people along behind me. If I can stay in the middle of that herd, there's no way I'm going to get out of here.
And you mentioned the radio show. I believe your radio show, the title is Self-Discovery. Is that correct?
No, it's called The Quick Fix.
The Quick Fix.
With Bradley Quick. The Quick Fix to Bradley Quick on Cool Change Radio.
Cool Change Radio. And people can find out more information by going to the website, coolchangeradio.com, I understand.
www.coolchangeradio.com.
And they could also find out They could also find out more about you by going to your website, which is bradleyquick.com.
BradleyQuick.com. That's absolutely right. We have over 700 MP3 shows on BradleyQuick.com and over 300 audio-video shows on CoolChangeRadio.com. I've interviewed people like Wayne Dyer, Melody Beatty, John Bradshaw, Don Miguel Ruiz, and a thousand. It's just amazing what we've done.
Bradley, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. It's been a pleasure talking to you, sir.
My pleasure, sir, and thank you for your time. Have a great, great day.
Bradley Quick, author of Quick Fix, A Simple Process for Positive Change. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0141, and you'll find links to Bradley's website, plus links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
In a severe case of pride going before the fall, police in Manchester, England, knew they found the house of the man they were looking for when they spotted a framed newspaper clipping about his crimes above the fireplace. Sure enough, after seeing the wanted man's mugshot staring down on them from the wall, officers found the fugitive hiding in a kitchen cupboard. The framed newspaper clipping contained an article which included the fugitive's picture and the fact that he was on the run from police. And the friend who gave the fugitive a place to hide was sentenced to community service and a 2-month curfew. Police Constable Mike Lawler said, not only did this fugitive frame himself, quite literally, he also unintentionally framed his friend in the process. Whatever the motivation, this act of utter vanity pretty much handed us both men on a plate. So, why would someone be so vain that they would actually put their wanted clippings in a frame over the mantle? One reason and one reason only. They're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0141. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And on the website, you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And again, that's 0141. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of...
Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.